Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I'm going to let you guys know, you can't see me, so you don't know, and you might never know if I don't tell you. We did haircuts this weekend. I don't know that mine went swimmingly well, to be honest with both of you.
Now, did your wife cut your hair?
She did.
Okay.
She did.
And you're kind of feeling like Jordan Renan right now?
No, I don't think it's that bad. It's short is the issue.
Okay.
It's very short.
A little
short.
Too close for comfort?
Yeah. I mean, listen, in a week it'll be fine. But now, because I am, you know, kind of the captain of the ship here, Rick, as you are at your home, it was the big debate, who's going to go first? She had never done a haircut before. I said, I'll go first. So I kind of took one for the team. My haircut, guess how long this thing took? A haircut.
A haircut for you, I'm going to say, with as good as Sherry is, I'm going to say 8 minutes.
Over 1 hour. It took a
really?
Very, very long time, yes. A very long time.
She's meticulous, Dave.
Meticulous.
Yes.
It's true.
Detail-oriented.
She edged the back up like crazy stuff, but I don't know. It's a little short. A little bit short.
Well, good news for you. It'll be a while before anybody sees you other than your family.
And then the boys, of course, yeah. they look like you know, models the way theirs come out. I'm like, this is ridiculous. She
said, let's be honest. Their raw materials are a little bit better than yours.
Much better.
In terms of how they look.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Much better.
Yeah, I haven't attempted to try to cut my hair yet, and I'm reluctant to do so, Dave. I don't think it'll go all that well.
Rick, where are you at with your hair?
Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, my neck hair connects to my beard, and my it's a mess. My mustache is growing over my lips. Let me ask you a question. Did you go scissors and buzzer combination?
No, it was
just
all buzzer.
Buzzers? What do we do?
Just all buzzer. It was all yeah. buzzer. We did a two all around.
Mm, so two all around. No
short.
Fade, nothing?
No. I mean, listen, yeah. She doesn't have her degree from
yeah,
Harvard
his
University.
Wife is not giving him a fade, Rico.
A fade? No. I'm glad that I don't look like, you know, something's wrong with me. I look like I'm a guy that has a little short hair. That's it.
Listen, she loves you. That's all that matters. I mean, she's the one that has to deal with it. No one can see it. So, I mean, the fact that you went first and sacrificed for your kids is great. I would have to imagine that, like, I don't know, 30 or so minutes in, you're probably starting to come to the realization that this is not going to look great. It shouldn't take this long.
It took a very yeah. long time. A very long time.
Yeah, that's touch and go. Well, I mean, once you get past, I mean, with buzzers, someone with buzzers in their hands, I mean, you start approaching an hour. I don't know if great things are probably happening.
Yeah. But you know what? It's passable and it's okay. So we move along.
It doesn't really matter. Let's be honest. I mean,
no,
she still loves you. She's the one sleeping with you. Who cares what your hair looks like?
Yeah. I guess that's a valid point. So how was Mother's Day for you? Did you take care of everything yesterday? Like, what did you do?
We had some issues. Poor Ella had a little bit of a stomach thing going on. I don't know if it was something she ate or whatever it is. So we had some stuff coming out of both ends. So we kind of had to deal with that for most of yesterday.
Oh, so she wasn't feeling well.
Nah, she wasn't feeling good. But we celebrated more on Friday than on Sunday.
Well, that's nice. I mean,
because the kids couldn't wait.
Mother's Day. They were so excited for Mother's Day.
Yeah, I mean, every day should be Mother's Day. I mean, what the mothers are doing now with homeschooling and everything else. I mean, they're the real MVPs, and she knows that. But the kids, I mean, as soon as the present got delivered, they wanted to give it to her then. So just to hold them off to Friday was a chore. So Friday we did it. They gave them the cards and the presents and everything else, and it was good. All in all, good.
Good. Good. I did all the dishes yesterday, every single dish.
That's impressive.
Every single dish. Ran
See,
the dishwasher.
This could be, I mean,
pod.
This,
yep.
This whole pandemic could be, I mean, maybe in your best interest as far as.
Yesterday was my coming out party. Yeah. I took it to another level yesterday. It was remarkable. Really. I found a way
special.
to take the razor apart and I was able to declutter that. I was at another level yesterday.
Yeah, but you act like you're scrubbing dishes. It sounds like you took the dishes out of the sink and put them in the dishwasher.
Well, I wiped them down because you don't want to leave like crusty food on a dish and then you put it in the dishwasher. It's still there when the dishwasher's done running. So I like to make sure it's somewhat clean when it goes in.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. Yeah,
you made breakfast yesterday. Eggs.
Okay, now we're talking. Scrambled.
How about this? A pan of egg whites, a separate pan of eggs with the yolk.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive. So scrambled, I'm imagining.
Yes, but I can make all sorts of eggs. Fried eggs, over easy, over hard, you name it.
That's impressive. I mean, they do say, I mean, if you watch some of these Food Network shows, the sign of a true chef is the ability to cook an egg the right way.
It's about the only thing I'm capable of doing.
Don't sell yourself short. Come on. I mean, you sacrificed your
hair. I don't
have
a lot of talent in the kitchen.
You cleaned some dishes. You made some eggs.
Dishes.
Yep. I mean, I'm sure you didn't get her a present. God forbid you get her a present. But, I mean, that's enough, I guess.
It feels like this is not a present kind of Mother's Day, though.
That's a little, I mean, just something little nice. You know what I'm saying?
We've got cards. Loving cards. Beautiful cards.
Cards is nice.
Yeah, maybe cards, some earrings, would have been dishes, nice. Dinner, breakfast. I think, and we cleaned out some drawers yesterday as well.
These aren't like bedside drawers, I hope.
No, like drawers in the kitchen.
Okay.
Like, you know, menus and
nice.
That kind of stuff. Markers, Sharpies,
sure.
That kind of stuff, yeah.
Hey, you guys are the married guys. When you go above and beyond with the chores around the house, does that lead to getting special treatment, extra attention?
It's like an aphrodisiac. It's like an aphrodisiac.
It is? All right. I was just trying to, you know.
Yeah, I purposely break stuff around the house now just so I have to fix it.
Just to fix it, just to show. Look what I did.
Put the tool belt on, go to work.
Where's that crazy
Yeah, loop? You should have seen. I lifted Milo's bicycle seat, and it was like, she's looking at me just, I mean, she couldn't get enough.
Really?
Oh, she couldn't believe I could do it. I'm like, well, I did. First of all, I was a little bit offended, but then once I did it, I mean, the reaction was well worth it.
Like a dozen roses,
see,
huh?
These are the things I need to know, guys. I mean, you guys are already on the other side of it. I need more insight like this.
Well, we're here to help.
That's what I'm saying. Be good teammates.
We could do a segment.
Try to help me put myself in position to win.
Marital and parenting tips with Rick and Dave.
There we go.
Right? What? You laugh. You don't think that the two of us would have the answers for most things?
No, I think we would. Yeah. Well, no, I'm just laughing because you're funny. No, absolutely. I mean, we'd have Chris. I mean, we'd be like the Michael Jordans of Chris's.
I wouldn't want to be as mean, Chris. I wouldn't want to be as ruthless. I'd like to think I would give you a little more adoration and affection as I gave you some advice.
More of a soft touch, like Scottie
yes.
Pippen. You would be the Scottie Pippen of it.
By the way,
Rick would be the Michael Jordan.
Very aggressive.
If you're Scottie Pippen, how do you? And I know he was a great player. But to say I'm not going in a game with less than 2 seconds to go in a must-win basketball game, how do you ever get over that moment?
Well, I don't think you do. I mean, what was worse is if he could go back, he wouldn't change it. I can't believe that.
Why would he say that, though? Why would he say that?
I have no idea.
Like, why would he stand on that, pick that hill to die on 25 years later? Clearly, it was a bad look. There are a lot of moments in this docuseries where you look at Scottie Pippen, you're like, that's not the way a top 50 player should act. Mm-mm. It really isn't, man, because that was selfish in that moment. Like, you might feel a way about Phil Jackson drawing up the play for Tony Kukoc, but you still got to go out there on the court and try to give your guys the best chance to win. Because there's a difference between Myers being on the court versus Scottie Pippen. Say what you want. That was a bad look for Scottie Pippen. Also,
terrible.
What happened at the beginning of the 98 season with him not wanting to get the surgery, like, that was a bad look. There are just things that happen. And you look at Scottie Pippen and say, you wish he would have made a better choice as a teammate under those circumstances.
I just don't like the fact that, I mean, pose the question, would you change it? I mean, how the obvious answer is, of course I would change it.
Yeah, but you know what it feels
like?
That feels like to me, Rick, is like a child that they get in trouble. And you're like, well, you would never do that again. And just to save face, like, well, sure, I would do that again. Like, there's no way that he would make that. I can't imagine that in the same situation again, he would make that same decision.
Well, that actually aggravated me more. I mean, and listen, no one's, I'm not going to resolve him of blame for not, you know, going into the game. But, I mean, emotions running high, you know. I don't agree with it, but maybe you could, you know, explain to me why you did it. But if I all of a sudden could jump in a time machine and go back and change it, of course you would change it. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
You'd have to change it.
Yeah, you would have to change it. I mean, I don't understand why that's, I mean, who's, you're not changing anyone's mind by sticking to your guns and saying, no, I wouldn't change it.
I just can't believe. I just can't believe that this guy, in the biggest moment of the season, was asked to, you know, to whatever, to inbound the ball. And he said, I'm not going into the game. I mean, that's just awful.
Yeah, it's not great, which is exactly why you would change it. I mean, I don't think people's opinions have changed about it. I still think people look at that and say, that was a bad look. That was a bad decision. So of course you would change it.
Like, people destroy him for the migraine headache, and I always thought that was unfair. I mean, if you've ever had a migraine, you know what it's like. And if he truly had a migraine in game seven, then, I mean, you can't play. It's completely debilitating. So I've always kind of taken a side with that one. But to not go in with 2 seconds left in a tie game, in the biggest moment of the season. And then they show this highlight package of Tony Kukoc hitting, you know, huge shot after huge shot. It kind of makes sense that he was the guy that they called on for that final shot in that moment.
Yeah, Tony Kukoc was a good player. I mean, you know, was there a bunch of different things that maybe went into Scottie Pippen's decision to do that? Maybe, but I mean, you'd have a hard time convincing me that was the right decision.
You're right. I would agree with you on that one in terms of who you draw the play up for. But I think one thing was clear. Once Jordan walked away, Scottie Pippen felt like he was moving into that role in terms of what he meant to the franchise. And when he didn't get treated the way that Jordan got treated, especially in those critical moments of the game, that's probably what led to him feeling a way about what Phil Jackson did. But the reality is that Scottie Pippen ain't Michael Jordan. Even though he's a great player, he's not at that level. And so he's not going to get treated like that. And Tony Kukoc had success making big shots throughout the course of the regular season leading up to that moment. So I don't think Phil was wrong for making that choice, but clearly Scottie Pippen was wrong for handling it the way that he did. Because that's something that's hard to recover from when it comes to the relationships with your teammates in the locker room. Like, everybody's going to look at you just a little bit different. Like, y'all still might be cool, but underneath everything, it's just kind of like, does this guy prioritize winning? Is it really about the team, or is it really just about him?
It never goes away, right? I mean, when you see it last, like, I remember it. I remember it like it was yesterday, that the end of that game, that he wouldn't go in, Kukoc hit the shot. I didn't know the Cartwright story. I thought that was interesting. And how, you know, he spoke in front of the whole team and was crying and all that stuff. But I mean, that's something, what is that? That's 94. So we're talking about 25 plus years ago. And I think most people that were alive remember that like it was yesterday. That was a definable moment for Pippen in that era.
Yeah, that's one of those things you don't shake. I mean, that's like, you know, when you have, you know, Phillip Rivers playing on a torn ACL and you got LaDainian Tomlinson on the sideline with his helmet on. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those looks that just doesn't go away.
Here's a good question on Twitter. Les Luck says, yeah, I wonder if the shot was missed, would Pippen have played in the overtime?
I mean, at that point, are you all in? I mean, you've already made the statement. Are you all in at that point? I mean, that's a test. I mean, those are the little tests that you get put through. I mean, during the course of your career, we have to make the decision that's in the best interest of your team. You can be hurt by it. You can feel like it should be you taking the shot, but you can't, I mean, you can't react that way if you're a real leader. That's what these guys don't understand sometimes, man, is, you know, careful what you wish for. Like, I mean, you want to be the guy, you want to be, you know, the unquestioned leader. That ain't so easy. I mean, Kyrie, I don't want to play under LeBron's shadow. I want to be my own guy with my own team. Oh, how'd that work out in Boston? Mm-hmm. Pretty good? So, I mean, it's not as easy as, you know, these greats make it look. If it's Michael Jordan and he's on the court, he's getting, I mean, it's going to be...
Going to be Michael Jordan taking that shot.
Yeah. Like Doug Collins. Like, well, what play was that? That was give Michael the ball and everyone else get the bleep out of the way. That was the play.
100%.
And it worked.
100%.
And it worked. But it worked for Kukoc too.
Yeah, but great players make coaches look really good. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, it's, you draw up the play, but if your play doesn't execute, you look like, I mean, who cares what you draw up?
100%.
And I can understand why Scottie Pippen's feelings are hurt.
I don't disagree with you, but to take it to the point that you won't go back into the game is a far cry from having your feelings hurt, though.
No, exactly right. But I mean, if you're the head coach of that team, you're not sitting there worried about whose feelings. Like, you shouldn't have to worry about whose feelings you're hurting.
No, you
shouldn't. Drop the best play. Yeah, I'm going to draw. You put your coach in a bad spot.
Yeah, but like, it's also Scottie Pippen putting himself over the team, and that's the part of it that that you can't justify. Like, you can never square that circle. Doesn't matter how much time and space you put between him doing that and when you talk about it, like, that'll never be right. Now, good for him that Jordan eventually came back and they went on a second three-peat, but, I mean, guys will always question, you know, Scottie Pippen's motives. And I guess that's what separates a guy from being a Robin versus a guy that's a Batman. You know, if you want to take it there and try to use that analogy, like, Michael Jordan did whatever it took to win. Like, that's what it came to, and that there was no compromising that. To me, Scottie Pippen compromised winning by deciding not to go back in the game.
But I think it's also, too, to speak to, I mean, a bigger point, and I truly believe this. I mean, the best teams I ever played on, we had good head coaches. We had coaches that were, you know, were leaders, but they weren't who led the team. It was the players inside that locker room that held each other accountable. I mean, that's when you need somebody to grab Scottie Pippen that he respects. Say, hey, listen, you know, get your ass on the court. I don't care if Phil hurt your feelings. This is what we're running.
Yeah, it's a bad
and
look.
And that was, I mean, Scottie was supposed to be that guy. That's who we thought he was.
I know.
He was going to be that guy.
I think a lot of people lost a lot of respect for him in that moment. Eric in Queens. Eric, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good day, gentlemen. How are you all today?
We're okay, Eric.
Okay. Yeah, I had three quick questions for you guys. Well, for one, I always felt as though when Michael Jordan had left the 94 for baseball, I always felt that if he wouldn't have never, let's say now, if he wouldn't have had left that team at the time, I felt so they would have went on to winning, I would say, 8 rings. I would say Michael Jordan would have been right there with Bill Russell. And I say that also during the Jerry Krause and break up the team, as people say, maybe they would have went on to win more titles. Then I have a third question. I have another question for you guys. This is you guys' opinion. Let's say, why didn't Game 6 of the Knicks, okay, when Jordan was already gone, why didn't the Knicks been able to pull out that Game 6 against the Houston Rockets? Give me your opinion on that one. They had a chance to win the championship.
Well, why couldn't they win the game? I mean, they didn't shoot well, and they didn't make big shots in a big moment. Houston was a good basketball team.
But you up 3-2. You should have been able to pull that one off.
Well, but just because you're up 3-2 means you should be able to win the series? When you're going back to Houston for 2 games?
I wouldn't want to go back for a Game 7 and look what happened to them. They went back to Game 7.
You did go back for a Game 7.
Yeah, and then they lost. Which if you would have pulled off the Game 6, you wouldn't have to go to Game 7. Could have won that championship.
But you make it sound like the Knicks were playing the L.A. Clippers of back in the day. I mean, the Houston Rockets were a good team.
Yeah, I'm not going to take them away from the Houston Rockets. They was, but during that time, if you know that Jordan was absent, I would have tried. I mean, yeah, you're right. The Rockets was a good team, but they just shouldn't have lost Game 6.
Well, of course, in hindsight, you don't want to lose Game 6. You don't want to go into a Game 7 if you can avoid it. I mean, but you have both teams getting paid to try to win games. It's not like the Knicks were like, hey, you know what? We should probably just, you know, mail it in for Game 6 and we'll just pick it up in Game 7.
Game 6 was in Houston. I mean, he makes it sound like Game 6 was at the Garden. Game 6 was in Houston. It's not like the Knicks had a chance to clinch at home.
I don't disagree with you. For me, that's just a ridiculous point.
All right,
let's really focus here. Michael Jordan's not here. Let's try to end this one. Of course you're trying to end
it. You think they weren't trying to win?
Trying to win it as quickly as you can.
Michael Jordan's not here. Clearly, we should now be able to win. I mean, they tried. They did everything in their power. Let's go to Matt in the Bronx. He wants to apologize and take the side of one Scottie Pippen. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're okay.
All right. I'm not taking the side of Scottie Pippen. What I think is that he, you know, it was bad for the team to not go in there. But I just feel that we're harsh on Scottie Pippen. And we look at punching teammates in the face as, well, that's good for the team. The team needed that. You know, both are bad for the team. And I just feel that we're ganging up on Scottie Pippen for no reason. And, you know, he has every right, I feel, to be hurt. He made the wrong decision. But, you know, we just give Jordan the pass for punching people in the face. And
yeah, but time out. That's not apples to apples. I mean, what you do in the heat of the moment in practice is different than all of a sudden in a huge moment in a must-win game. You decide your feelings are hurt, so you're going to sit out the final play. That's completely different.
I'm saying both are bad.
You may want to say both are bad. Does Steve Kerr think, you know, the fight he got into Michael Jordan was a bad thing for that team or for his relationship with Michael Jordan? He would tell you the opposite.
What, would you respond well if someone punched you in the face and say, hey, I needed that?
Let me ask you a question. Me and you are on the same team, right? Super competitive. We're going back and forth. This is, I'm, I'm defending you, you're defending me. We're going back and forth, right? All of a sudden, you know, I'm upset because there's ticky-tack foul, so I give you a hard foul. Nothing crazy, just a hard foul. And you get pissed off because you're a competitor, and you punch me in the chest. What am I supposed to do? Just take the punch in the chest? Or am I going to react and punch you in the face? Was Steve Kerr right for punching Michael Jordan in the chest first?
I think there's a difference between pushing and shoving and then punching someone in the face. I just think it's different. I've been on teams too where, you know, guys get into it, they push each other back and forth and they get separated. Okay, you guys are cool down, but punching in the face is another level. You know, that's just to me. And he's punched other teammates in the face as well. He's great. He's the greatest player, but I just feel like we give him a pass for, you know, being a bad teammate.
See, I don't think he's a bad teammate. I think
I completely disagree with that take as well. He's not a bad teammate.
There are coaches that Chris knows. Chris has said some of the best coaches. There are coaches that tell players during training camp to mix it up so they start fights.
100%.
To pick up the intensity
100%.
level.
100%. That happens all the time.
You just didn't have to tell Jordan to do it. He just took it upon himself to do it.
Yeah, don't, he was let's not coach, pretend like he was Phil, the best player. He did everything.
Don't give Phil Jackson a free pass. Phil Jackson knew exactly what he was doing. Calling ticky-tack fouls. He was trying to incite Michael Jordan
is what he was trying to do.
Then you know when you're in the heat of battle, even if it's just practice, like if you're gonna decide to start something, one, it's gonna be you that finishes or the person that you started with is gonna finish it. Someone's gonna finish it.
Yeah, but if you have the right leadership in a team, y'all will have it out and then it'll go back to being brothers again. And that's the difference between teams that compete and win consistently versus being a perennial loser. Because when you have that discord, when you have disagreements, when you have conflict, it's all about being able to resolve that. Sometimes it gets physical, but ultimately you end up settling it and you move on and you move forward together. When you're on a bad team, they just splinter apart. And that's the one thing where you got to give Michael Jordan credit, man. Like, the guy cared about winning. That was the priority, and he set the standard. He was intense. Sometimes he went over the line in practices. But the fact that he was willing to acknowledge that, the fact that he came back and apologized to teammates, that shows you that he had a level of awareness where he recognized it's not just about him, it's about all of us pulling the rope in the same direction in order to accomplish the goal.
And doing it in practice is a far cry from doing something like that in the game. I mean, look, we might never have known that this happened if it didn't become public. It happened in practice. When you're Scottie Pippen and there's 1.8 seconds to go and the coach says, here's the play, and you say, I'm not going in the game, that's for everyone to see. There's no hiding that. What happens in practice, I mean, there's a chance that we never find out about that. And I'm sure, even though we're having a 10-part docu-series on this right now, there's a lot of things that happen that we still don't know about with Jordan and the Bulls that happened in practice and behind the scenes.
Oh, I know a lot of the stuff got swept under the rug, Dave. But, I mean, going back to that moment with Scottie Pippen, and what was that, Game 3
yep.
of the Eastern Conference semis? I mean, the Bulls are not as good of a team with Pete Myers on the floor versus having Scottie Pippen inbound the ball. They're just not. Like, that is a fact. So you took away a part of your team's chances to win that game. Like, you lessened the odds of your team having a chance to win that game by deciding that you were not going to go into the game. Like, you compromised a shot to win the game. Like, how could you not feel a way about that? To me, that would bother me a whole lot more than my teammate would do something like that versus a guy that punched me in the eye in a fight we got into in practice.
Yep, I would agree. The votes are in, and tomorrow, May 12th, we're celebrating Derek Jeter by showing a classic Derek Jeter game on ESPN television as part of our MLB Encore Tuesdays. The game that you voted, Chris, guess what it was? The game that you voted on.
Mr. November.
Came out as,
come on, Mr. November.
Mr. November against the Diamondbacks in 2001. You can watch that tomorrow, ESPN television, 7 o'clock, to see the dramatic ninth inning comeback capped by Jeter's walk-off homer in the 10th inning. So, I watched part of the preliminary fights on ESPN regular television. I didn't see the pay-per-view portion of it, but it seemed, Chris, like UFC went off pretty well and it was pretty enjoyable on Saturday night.
No, it was. I thought it was awesome, Dave. They did a great job in terms of the broadcast team trying to fill in and bring the overall energy up. I did think that not having the crowd does take away from the broadcast to a degree, but I thought overall the fights were great. It was entertaining. I really enjoyed it. I really did.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed it too. I mean, to have live sports. I actually didn't mind not having the crowd. I think at the end, you know, Joe Rogan, when he was doing his interviews and, you know, just the habit of, you know, introducing the fighter to, and he's like, oh, to nobody, just because it was, I mean, it was new to everybody. But I actually like the fact that you could hear, I mean, each corner's coaches kind of coaching the fighters during the event. I thought was pretty interesting.
So I don't know which fighter it was, but I heard one of the guys was losing his match, and they were analyzing it on television. And he heard what they were saying, and he kind of changed his formula.
Greg Hardy.
Right?
It was Greg Hardy.
That's unbelievable.
No, it is. But, I mean, are you surprised that the guy that played in the NFL can take coaching and adjust on the fly?
No.
I'm not at all.
Interesting, though.
I'm not at all. And the point that they kept making throughout the match was that Greg Hardy's athleticism puts him on a whole nother level in comparison to the other heavyweights that he's going up against. And that was clearly the case going up against DeCastro. Now, he does lack a little bit in technique, and you saw him, you know, continue to get kicked on that lead leg, but he found a way and he kept his overall energy and activity level up, and that's what won him the match. So, I mean, it was, to me, the entire card was entertaining. Like, I watched it from start to finish. I mean, Francis Ngannou, can you say enough about his performance 20 seconds in? Good night, see you later. Like, it was unbelievable to see how he took care of his business in quick fashion. But I mean, there wasn't a moment in any of the fights where you're like, oh, this is kind of boring. Like, you didn't have that. And I think that's exactly what the sports world needed. And that was a huge win for UFC overall.
Did you see Nico Price's eye, by the way? Has anyone seen that picture
yet
of his eye? Oh, I don't know, man. I want to believe that I would step into the octagon
no, you
and
don't.
Fight.
No, you don't. No, dudes are built differently.
Watching some of these fights, man, no chance. You know, like the what I find the most, I don't even know what the word is, impressive maybe, but like going like that Gaethje fight in the Ferguson fight. I mean, for Ferguson to last as long as he lasted, but just in all these fights, like they brush off these kicks like it's no big deal. Like, can you imagine being kicked in your leg? Like someone just as hard as they could just kicking you in your leg.
No.
How bad
no.
that would hurt?
No, I think you can't walk then, right?
You would crumble.
Yeah.
Most people would just crumble. That'd be it. And these guys
aside from the fights being entertaining, which I'm sure they were, and I people were really excited about the bulk of the fights, like, it went off well, right? Like, it looked pretty good. It was entertaining. You felt like you're watching real sports. Like, big picture, this was a good return for the sport and for sports on Saturday night, it felt like.
Oh, 100%, Dave. And my biggest takeaway from Saturday night had nothing to do with the UFC. I mean, it had everything to do with the fact that you had a contact sport hold a successful event. And I think that's going to be all the justification that the NFL needs in order to try to move forward with getting the season underway at some point this fall. Like, I mean, I understand you're talking about a lot more people and, you know, being in proximity for a longer duration. But, I mean, if the UFC can find a path forward, I think the NFL is going to try to do something similar. And they're going to have the benefit of being able to have 3 to 4 extra months in order to plan and actually do it. So I thought that was a huge win for the UFC, but I thought it had implications for the rest of the sports leagues, but the NFL in particular, because you're talking about a sport where you're having a lot of contact between the competitors. So I think that, you know, listen, having live sports back is awesome for us from an entertainment standpoint. And it's something that everybody was looking forward to. But I thought what happened this weekend is going to have implications for what we're going to see this fall.
Yeah, I think the most, I mean, and again, I think it's, you can be optimistic about it, and I get what you're saying. I think the one takeaway too was you had a fighter ends up popping positive, so that didn't force the entire event to be shut down. You know, it was him and, you know, two of his cornermen or whatever they were, you know, they all test positive, so they get quarantined, that fight gets canceled, and then the rest of the card goes on. But again, you're talking about a situation where you have the fighters flying in before they get to check into the hotel. They all get tested, and then they're allowed into the hotel. Everyone's got an armband. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is that going to be possible? Like, you're talking about players not wanting to be part of this whole quarantine situation because they don't want to be away from their families. That's why this thing, I mean, that's why this thing is working right now with the UFC. Because they test you, now you're allowed into the bubble, and then you get to fight. Yeah, I mean, you're relying on a lot of guys to do all the right things.
Right.
In order for this to be able to be done.
And this is how many guys? 24, right? Something in that range, plus their corner guys and whatever.
Yeah.
NFL game is a lot more than that. I don't know if you saw, Chris, Peter King interviewed Dr. Fauci.
I did.
For this week's Football Morning in America. And, you know, Fauci basically just said, we don't know. He said he thinks there's a chance, and the virus will kind of dictate what happens down the road in September, October, November, and hopefully if and when we get a football season this year.
And Dr. Fauci also went on to say that it is possible, and he said that if you are going to be able to pull it off, it's going to have to include widespread testing. I think he proposed, you know, testing everybody, players and coaches, twice a week. And that would ultimately lead to the NFL needing something like 200,000 tests for a season. And he said it felt a little piggish now to ask for those tests, but it's not outside of the realm of possibility to think that 3 months from now we'll be in a place where that is an available option and you're not taking tests away from folks that actually need it. So to me, I actually thought that was optimistic.
Right.
If he felt like they were going to be able to have the tests that they needed available in order to have a successful return to football. So, I mean, yeah, Dave, nobody can say with any degree of certainty where we'll be once August rolls around and it becomes time for guys to report to training camp. But I think that based on what we saw this weekend and the overall direction of where things are going in terms of what's happening to the spread of this virus across this country, I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility to have 3 months from now teams actually reporting for training camps and having practices. I don't.
Yeah, see, I think the other thing too, and I think that's really, I mean, where we're at is you don't know what this thing will look like a week from now, let alone, you know, months from now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the one thing that has to change is the conversation surrounding COVID-19. Like the context in which we look at COVID-19. Like it needs to, because football is, and Chris, you've been a part of locker rooms. I mean, flu goes through a locker room in a hurry, right? But it's the flu. So, I mean, it'll affect guys differently, but it's not life-threatening. Guys will play through it. You know, some guys can't. I think we need to get to that point where I don't think it's a vaccine. I think it's got to be a treatment. Like, they have to find a way to treat this. So
yeah, so if you get it, you don't die from it.
Yes.
Exactly right.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly
yes.
Right.
So yeah.
If that's the conversation, then I think you'll get to a point where between the testing and everything else, guys will be more willing to take that risk as opposed to now where you have really, I mean, no one has any good answers for you. Well, hey, Doc, how's it going to affect me? Well, guess what? I can't really, maybe it doesn't. Who knows? Maybe it does. Maybe you end up on a ventilator. We don't know. That's not good enough for a lot of guys at the moment.
I think as we get more drugs that are available for treatment and including that in the protocol on how you handle COVID-19, I think that ultimately is what's going to shift the conversation around the coronavirus, Rick. And so, yeah, we could be in that place a couple of months from now. I mean, in that article that Peter King did, he said 2 months ago we were still going out to eat at restaurants.
Right.
And that was March 11th. So, I mean, it's a situation where things can change quickly. And this is, you know, continuing to unfold, continuing to evolve. But I think because you have the best minds in the world working toward solutions to this pandemic, that sooner rather than later, we're going to have better treatment options. We're going to have a vaccine for this virus. So I guess that's why I'm choosing to have some hope that football season will eventually happen this fall. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to start on time, but I do think we'll have NFL football this fall.
And Mark Emmert finally came out and said something you've been saying for weeks and weeks, Chris, and that is if kids are not on campus, we're not playing college football in the fall.
Yeah, it's just not happening, Dave. Now, I texted with somebody that used to work in the Virginia Athletic Department, and they said that, yeah, that's if they don't have campus open and they don't have a part or the entire student body on campus, then they can't have the student athletes on campus. Now, the question then becomes, well, what does it mean when you say the campus is open? You know, I think that's when you have an area of gray where you can say, well, you know, we have campus open for a select amount or a select part of the student population. And because we're doing that, then maybe we can justify having the student athletes on campus, but I just think it's dangerous when you have the entity that's responsible for protecting these kids also be the entity that benefits the most from having them go out there and play.
Yeah.
I think what's scarier is, I mean, it sounds like the more we hear about this stuff and the more people you listen to and talk to, that a lot of these Power Fives could care less what Mark Emmert has to say. Like, they're happy making their own decisions.
Which is scary.
Well, it is scary. I mean, Chris, to Chris's point, I mean, I heard this morning. It's almost like what we're doing now. Like, I mean, you know, there are certain people that need to be in the studio to get us on the air. We don't need to be in the studio because we can do it from our houses. It'd be like the same thing. Like, okay, whatever school it is, we're open. We're going to say we're open. We're going to offer, you know, kids that don't need to be here, you can take your classes online. And then whoever we need here, it's essential, like the football players, then they'll be required to come in and be at school and be on campus.
It's a scary thought. I mean, to have the school partially open and to have football games taking place. And that's not far off. I mean, college football is soon.
Well, Joe Burrow took all his classes online, which I thought was interesting. I didn't even realize that.
I'm sure you're saying classes with air quotes, right?
Yes. Oh, okay. This whole conversation is all air quotes. Listen, the hypocrisy of the whole thing is we all get it. Like, we all understand that. That's, I mean, we've had plenty of those conversations. But that's, I mean, these will be some of the, you know, fugazi ways they get around, you know, trying to keep the charades of these are student athletes when we all realize that they're not.
But let me ask you this question, Rico, and this is the part where it gets a little confusing for me when it comes to college football. What's lost by delaying the college football season to the spring semester? I just think with college football, especially when you're talking about teenagers and young 20-somethings, you're going to try to buy as much time as you possibly can in order to make sure you have the best available options in terms of being able to deal with one of these kids getting infected with the virus. That's the part of it that doesn't make sense to me. Like, these Power Five conferences, I get that there's a lot of money on the line. But to me, I think that you would try to delay it as much as you possibly can, especially when you consider the fact that a lot of their revenue comes from ticket sales. I mean, if you push this thing off until January, February, and there's a vaccine available, maybe you don't have to make the tough decision on whether or not to play games without fans in stadiums. Maybe that's not something you even have to worry about. I just feel like you give yourself more options if you give yourself more time.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I guess the only answer to your question would be maybe the uncertainty of who knows. Like, I would, I'm of the same mindset. I think the NHL should start up later, and I think the NBA should start up later with you know, the 20, whatever it ends up being, 2021 season.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if it's feasible, like if you could make that work, if schedule wise you could come up with something that starts, you know, more like in the spring, I would want to give myself as much time as possible to get some answers to these questions.
Yeah. And the more time you have, the better treatments, vaccines, ideas that you would have. So it does seem to make sense. But bottom line is they probably want to get these games played because that brings in the money. And the sooner they get the money, the happier they'll be.
Which is really sad because it doesn't sound like they have the best interests of the kids in mind.
No, but this might be the biggest, but that's not the first time we felt like this from the NCAA, is it?
No, it's not the first time we felt like this from the NCAA. And as far as the pro sports trying to get things ramped back up, like I can understand it because you're talking about grown men that are making decisions and they have, more maturity and they can be more responsible about it. You can't ask, you know, I just think it's ridiculous to ask those college kids to put themselves in harm's way, especially when you don't have to have the level of urgency to have them out there this fall. That's the only thing that bothers me about this whole situation.
In these trying times, very important to remember we pull together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send us an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. And again, 5:30, Sam Darnold on the K Show on 98.7 ESPN today. Now, Rick, was it brought to my attention you wanted to play a game in the 12 o'clock hour? Is that right?
No, it's up to you. I have it ready. I mean, I was spent the weekend with obviously taking care of some other things, but I went out. I wanted to do some NFL related stuff, go division by division, and do some of the marry, bang, kill game that I like.
Well, I'd like to play then. I mean, if you've gone and done the legwork to play the game, then Chris, who are we not to go ahead and play said game?
Yeah, I'm never gonna be the one to say I don't want to talk about football. So yeah, I'm all in for whatever game Rico wants to play.
Is the NFC South
involved?
Some NFL. NFC South.
No, today. No.
What?
I will be, because I'm going to do. No, I mean, all the divisions will be done. I'm not going to start with that division. I'm going to start with something topical. So I was going to go with the NFC East. We don't have to do it today. I mean, we got plenty to talk about today. We can save it for tomorrow, but I wanted to throw it out there. It's
available. You're going to have a division a day?
A division a day, yeah.
Oh, so what? We could start today. We could start at 12:10 today.
Yeah, we can do it. I'm also trying to get us a very special guest. So
really? I mean,
if the guest comes through, then we'll have to obviously adjust on the fly. But
would that be today as well?
That would be today as well. So, I mean, we got a lot on our plates here.
Now, you will give us no insight into who the guest will be?
Zero.
So I'm just going to have the, like, in my ear, Santiago say, okay, Gary Bettman is on the line. Go.
Well, it's not going to be Gary Bettman, I can tell
you. Okay, but, I mean, whoever it is, that's how it's going to take place?
Yes, I want you to be surprised.
But what happens if I don't know what to ask this person?
You'll have more. I mean, the second you hear who this is, you'll be like, oh my God, we're going to have to keep him for the whole hour. I have that.
Really?
Yes.
Is this a big
very
star?
Very topical guest.
Topical
big
guest.
Big star, very topical guest.
Big star, very topical guest. What would you say the odds are that he joins us today?
It feels like we're getting closer than this happening.
So better than 50% that a big guest
way
is
better.
Joining us in the noon hour.
Way better. Way better than 50%.
Well, that's exciting. So here's how I say we play this thing. If he does not join at 12:10, we do your little game of the NFC East. If he does join, then all bets are off, and we talk to him and hopefully have long, fruitful conversation.
I'm good with that. I'm absolutely 100% good with that. I would rather the guest, to be honest.
Is he a fan of the show, this guest?
Big fan.
Big fan of the show?
Big fan of the show, yeah.
Professional athlete.
Not a professional athlete.
No. At one point was or never been a professional athlete?
Never was. Excellent golfer, not a professional athlete, though.
Excellent golfer.
But a humongous star.
Humongous star. Transcends sports?
Transcends this company, yeah.
Wow.
Does he cheer for the same football team that you do?
Unfortunately for him, he does, yeah.
Okay.
You know who it is, don't you?
Yeah, I know who it is.
How you ask one question, how do you know who it is?
Well, I mean, for Rick to say somebody's really good at golf, that's saying a lot. Because Rick is a scratch golfer. He tries to say he's a 6 handicap, but that's not true. So when Rick gives somebody props for being a good golfer, they better be damn good. Like, almost like if they concentrated on it, they could be on the PGA Tour kind of good. There are only a few big personalities out there that are like that. That don't play sports. So if you connect the dots, Andrea Kramer style, you come to one logical conclusion.
I don't know. I can't. Should I know who this is? Like, do you look down on me, Rick?
Yes,
because
in your
I don't
best
know
interest.
Who this is.
I would say probably. I mean, in the landscape of what you do, it's in your best interest to know who this is, yeah.
Well, I'm sure I know who it is, but I just don't know
this
who
guy
it is
could.
Right now.
I mean, if this guy didn't like you, he could probably. I'm speculating, but he could probably pick up the phone, make one call, and you'd be...
Really? So yeah, he's a powerhouse.
Powerhouse.
Should I be fearful for this guy to join us and maybe dislike
me? Because I think he likes you. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he likes you, yeah.
Oh, good. Well,
you could
good.
Ask him. But I mean,
do I need to walk on eggshells if we get this guy?
No.
Like, hi, sir, I'd like to ask you if you're comfortable answering this, or I can...
No.
Okay.
No, just be yourself. Everyone loves you.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.